welcome to the panel, NZ National, Wallace Chapman with you today, talking the presidential debate in a minute. Also this afternoon, there has been a backlash over a new website aimed at helping tenants understand what it takes to look after a house, things like how to ventilate, how to get on with your neighbours. We talked to co-creator Colette Barker. And something called the White Roof Movement. What is that all about? We talk about that after 4:30 and quite a bit in the Friday mailbag this afternoon, including we actually discussed burials yesterday and the issue of reusing burial plots after a certain amount of years came up. That's one thing that the Wellington City Council is looking at the moment, just to try and free up some land there, or actually the burial plots where it's all crowded. So the issue of burying vertically came up. So we have some letters coming about that. With us today is the CEO of the New Zealand Property Council, Leona Freeman, and comedian Alan McElroy. Well, two, the US presidential debate between Joe Biden and President Donald Trump held at Belmont University, Nashville, Tennessee, which has just finished. Biden gave Trump the thumbs up when he entered, and Trump asked him how he's doing as they walked on. The debate was held as the country is experiencing a large rise in the number of new coronavirus cases and deaths.
Anyone who's responsible for not taking control, in fact, not saying I take no responsibility initially. Anyone who's responsible for that many deaths should not remain as president of the United States of America. We're in a situation where there are 1,000 deaths a day now, 1,000 deaths a day, and there are over 70,000 new cases per day.
And here is Donald Trump later on racism.
I think I have great relationships with all people. I am the least racist person in this room.
What do you say to Americans who are concerned by that rhetoric?
I don't know. I don't know what to say. I got criminal justice reform done and prison reform and opportunity zones. I took care of black colleges and universities. I don't know what to say. They can say anything. I mean, they can say anything. It makes me sad because I am the least racist person. I can't even see the audience because it's so dark, but I don't care who's in the audience. I'm the least racist person in this room.
An average of recent polls shows Biden has a 9.9 point advantage among likely voters. 47 million Americans have now already voted. That's more than the total early votes cast in 2016. And the moderator was Kristen Walker, NBC's White House correspondent. Now with us is RNZ's Max Toll, who had been live blogging the event. Max, kia ora, welcome.
Hi, Wallace. How are you going?
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much. So, to the debate, you watched it in its entirety. Was there any, let's ask that question first, was there any clear winner?
Well, look, I mean, I think both bases will be exhaling right now. Neither really majorly stumbled. Both candidates got in some pretty clean shots. But, yeah, look, as you mentioned earlier, I think it was really up to the president to come out a clear winner based on how big of an underdog he is in the polls. To use a basketball analogy, I think Biden has about a 10-point lead with a minute left, and all he has to do is run out the clock. And it's up to Donald Trump to heave the three-pointers. And so to call it essentially a tie, I think works in Joe Biden's favor.
Yeah, you've got to point out the stylistics of the debate. If we compare it back to that first debate, remarkably more subdued. The arguments came forward with a bit more clarity. What do you make of that aspect?
Yeah, look, that first debate was really a disaster. It was far too chaotic. There was constant interruptions. There was shouting. There were put downs, and the debate commission obviously stepped in and introduced this concept of a mute button, which silenced both candidates while the other gave their initial responses to questions. And it worked. It worked very well. There may not have been a clear winner from the debate, but I think the audience was the clear winner, certainly in America, and certainly for floating voters who wanted to hear just a little bit of policy. It was far more cordial. You know, as you say, when both candidates walked in, there was even a nice little exchange between them both.
Yeah. Now, to quote you say we're learning not to live with it, we're learning to die with it, quote unquote, a pretty good Joe Biden line early on. And COVID, that really dominated, didn't it? Up to the first 30 minutes, I think.
Yeah. Look, I mean, not to criticise the moderator, Kristen Walker, I think she did a terrific job balancing both candidates who obviously wanted to get out as much as possible. But COVID really did dominate the first 30 minutes, and I don't think there was a clear winner on COVID. Both Trump and Biden sort of reiterated what they've been saying for weeks. Trump kept saying, look, it's China's fault. It's China's fault. We did what we could. We stopped flights from China as soon as possible. Biden said that's nonsense. I think there was one moment, though, where Biden fell down, and that's when at one point he said that, I don't want to lock down the country. And then a few seconds later he said, we're going to look at lockdowns. I think he used the word shutdowns, which is the American term. But yeah, COVID was a tie. They both basically went over old ground. Trump defending his handling the pandemic, which is pretty tough to do with more than 210,000 Americans dead.
Any big moments from either candidate?
Well, that's why I think I would give the slight edge to Joe Biden if I had to pick a winner. I think he had a couple of the couple of moments of clarity that were really quite strong. My favorite line of his was when Donald Trump defended the economy under his administration and how the stock market hasn't dramatically suffered as it might have done during the pandemic. And Biden's response was the idea that the stock market is booming is Trump's only measure of what's happening. Where I come from, Biden said, people don't live off of the stock market, which is a very good line. And that was definitely his MO during the debate, which was to appeal to regular Americans, lower and middle income Americans. And the fact that Trump keeps bragging about the stock market may not be something that resonates with those people.
He's quite good at that, isn't he, Max? I mean, there was another strong moment where Biden, he looks down the barrel of the camera saying, look, it's about the struggling middle class, not you or not I. It's about people who, a family who sits around that table wondering whether you can afford the tires or not. Mm. Do you think that style works for Joe Biden, that appeal to... I mean, you can always picture that in your mind, can't you? Trying to work up the bills at the family table.
Yeah, this is something he tried to do in the first debate, wasn't it? Look down the barrel of the camera and appeal directly to Americans, trying to speak over the shouting and the bickering. And if I could just go to the end of the debate, the final question that Kristen Walker asked was, okay, fast forward to your inauguration day, what are you going to say to Americans? And Trump's response was just to attack Biden over the same issues that he attacked him on over the course of the debate. But then Joe Biden gave the much better answer, and that was saying, look, I will represent all of you. I'm not going to be a Democratic president. I'm going to be an American president, and I'm going to make sure that you're all represented. I'm going to choose hope over fear, he said. I'm going to make sure science is listened to. And really, that's all he needs to do. He just needs to come across as presidential as possible. And I think, he did a pretty successful job at that.
Leonie, Alan, did you catch any of the debate at all or any of the debates?
No, can't say I did.
No, I did. I caught a bit of the initial debate. Right. I found it frustrating. I struggled to listen to Trump at the best of times, but it did remind me of arguing with a toddler.
And so you turned off from there.
I couldn't do it. But then listening to what you had there, it's so funny. Even when he talks about being the least racist person, he has to be the best at everything.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the best at not being racist, you know? I can't deal with him.
I think, that's what turned me off that first one too, was it was just like, it sounded like a boxing match with words, and there was very little policy, very little of anything, and you just had and abusing. So obviously the concept of the mute button worked well.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Finally, Max, what were your thoughts on the moderator, Kristen Walker? Did she have it under control?
She did a far better job than the moderator, Chris Wallace, in the first debate. Balanced each candidate's talking time. There weren't any major interruptions or moments where they were just shouting over each other like the first one. But just coming back, I mean, you played that cut of Trump saying he was the least racist person in the room. Clearly ridiculous hyperbole. But I actually thought on the issue of racial inequality, he probably won that topic despite these outlandish statements that he makes. And that's because in this segment of the debate, he really hammered Biden on his race record. Biden in 94 backed a crime bill in America that led to thousands of black people being imprisoned. The balance there was terrible for the black community. But he kept saying, look, you were in power for 8 years. What have you done And look, we can talk about whether or not that's factual and whether or not Obama and Biden did get through much policy. The Congress was dominated by Republicans at the time, so it was difficult. But just this line, you know, you were in power for 8 years. What did you do? That's probably his strongest argument right now against Joe Biden.
Yeah, and didn't Joe Biden actually kind of acknowledge that and say, look, I want to be president and I want to make things right. I kind of apologize for that.
Yeah, exactly. Biden said, look, the Congress was dominated by Republicans. What could we do?
Yeah, it's certainly a very interesting part of the debate, wasn't it? Max Toll, thank you very, very much for joining us on the panel, NZ National there. Very interesting stuff. Who'd quickly on the panel, do you get a sense of, we don't know, do we? Because people have thought that Hillary Clinton had it in the bag.
I know, who would have thought last time?
Yeah. What do you reckon? Who wins this time?
That's the same as what you said. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, it's okay. You don't know because you know you couldn't predict it last time.
I mean, the polls are suggesting Joe, but Biden. But you know, we thought that last time.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. Now this is interesting. Just some controversy in the world of sport, as Stuff reports. 13-year-old Isla Thoman is not allowed to play in the under 13 boys grade in the Wellington's Pacific Youth Cup because she's a girl. That has led her club team, the under 13 Petone Panthers, playing her illegally all season and challenging the ban. So we're joined now by Petone Panthers under 13 manager, Ariana McGregor. Ariana, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
Good to have you on. Tell us about Ayla. It sounds like she is an all-round sports star. She plays baseball too.
She plays, she's away at a tournament at the moment in Nelson, playing under 16 baseball in a boys tournament and a boys team. She is a representative for Hutt Valley Softball. She's represented Wellington Touch and Hutt Valley Rugby. And she's just an amazing, talented, young athlete.
Right. So what's the deal? New Zealand Rugby League rules say that the maximum age for males and females to play in mixed gender full contact rugby league is 12 years of age. So from there, girls either have to create their own team and find others to play against or move up to the under 15 girls grade. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. There is no... So with Ayla, we play under 13 rugby in a mixed grade. And
yes,
we have this entire season because that's allowed. But rugby is just as physical as league. So with Ayla, in a competition, she can, like normal club competition, she can play an age group down. Therefore, she could play in the under 12 grade and a mixed grade.
Right.
Now, if we were to put her in the under 12 team, she would be playing against 11-year-olds and 10-year-olds who she could potentially hurt in tackles and so forth like that. So we played her in the under 13 boys grade with her friends and in her right age group. And she did exceptionally well, had no injuries, and all the teams that we played were accepting that we had her in the team.
Right. And yet, as I understand it, this is illegal. Why is it illegal? What's the problem?
Well, apparently it's been deemed that girls develop differently to boys, as we know, and that apparently it may damage some parts of their body in puberty and in growth with the impact in rugby league. That is the kind of official word that we get. But my son, who's 13, he has all his friends that are girls. Most of them are bigger and, as he wouldn't like to admit, a little bit stronger than himself.
Right. Yeah, so because that's what the medical council says, eh? The Rugby League Medical Council says that research does suggest there is a big increase in risk of serious and long-term injury for girls at this age, and that is why this rule exists.
But I feel that this rule has been in place for many, many, many years, and it's not taken into account the development that we're trying to get for young girls within sport, and it's not taken into account individual developmental, you know, whether they've developed bigger and faster and stronger than other girls. So I think it's a very archaic rule that has not been modified in over, like, probably like 15 years or so.
Oh, okay.
But it needs to be changed.
Let's ask the panel. They've got a question. Leonie, have you got a thought or a comment, question?
Well, I sort of, I can sort of relate because I don't know if you realise this, Wallace, but I actually played rugby league with the boys until I was 11 west and West Auckland. And then we actually moved to Christchurch. And then I played with the Sumner Boys Cricket Club until I was about 13. So I was a bit of a tomboy and I actually played with all the boys for many years. So I can sort of relate to this.
Oh, okay.
And you know, it's a really hard one because I can remember, you know, you were just one of the boys and you were in this team and then suddenly you got to a point and then you couldn't play with them anymore. So, you know, it's a pretty
and
tough...
And so what happens then? That's it? They cut you off?
Yeah, so for me the change happened when I went to high school. So I was 13 at the time and at that stage there was no girls cricket or girl... Because this was obviously a long time ago. No girls cricket or rugby. So I went and played basketball instead and it wasn't until I was about 17 or 18 that the cricket came back. So I started playing women's cricket at about 17.
All right. So, look, is there a lot of support in the league community for AILA, Ariana?
We have so much support. We've got support from the rugby community. We've got support from the rugby league community. You know, we've tried our best to talk to the organisers of the Pacific Youth Cup because it's the first of its kind down here. We've tried Wellington Rugby League and New Zealand Rugby League, and Wellington Rugby League have been quite good to deal with. They say, you know, we know that things need to change. It's not going to happen now. She won't be allowed to play now, but in the future, we could look at changing it. And NZRL haven't come back to us at all. They've actually taken their constitution or their rules offline as of 2 days ago.
Oh, okay, right. Alan, let's bring you in. You got a question?
Yeah, no, too many rules. I don't know why there's so many rules. If she wants to play, let her play. If she's skillful enough, better than the lads, and can give them give as good as she gets, then let her. Why stop it? You know.
What? Yeah, her brothers and her team, like they're her brothers. They're like, why can't she play? Mm. She's better than most of us.
Yeah.
we've just been told. No, it's the rules. But what we've been told by Pacific Youth Cup is that if we keep her on our team list, they will withdraw us completely from the competition.
Oh, okay. All right.
I said, if we don't play her, why can't she stay on the team list? And they said, nope, she has to be removed or you guys will be removed.
And is there a good competition? You were talking about there is girls' competition that continues on. So is there quite a good standard of rugby league now for the under-15 girls?
Under-15 girls, it definitely is. It's getting there. But good. I know there's a lot of under-13 girls that are having to move into under-15. But actually the skill level and the size level is actually kind of bigger than the 13-year boys.
Mm.
So Ayla's mum has said that she feels safer Ayla playing in her actual age group with boys because she's played all season, albeit illegally, than with the under-15 girls.
What a situation. Just finally, Ariana, how does Ayla feel about this? How's she feeling about this?
Well, the thing about Ayla is she loves her team. She'll support us no matter what. She doesn't want to impact the boys not being allowed to play in the competition, and she said, please don't withdraw them from the competition because of me, because I will stand with you guys no matter what.
Well, and nice.
It's pretty mature.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's so good. She's probably better than me. I just want to, you know, make an awareness because there's such a huge gap between 13 and 15 for girls in a lot of sports, and they're just like saying, oh, well, just come back later, instead of carrying on doing something with them.
Just come back later, right?
Have enough.
Yeah.
We don't have enough to form a team, but we've got enough girls out there to have them in teams.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that there'll be quite a few people who could relate to the scenario amongst our listeners, They'll contact us, I'm sure. But for now, Ariana McGregor, thank you very much for being with us on the panel.
Thank you for having me.
Ariana is Petone Panthers under 13 manager. 2101 is the number to text. If you have had that sort of situation, just come back later. Not really a proper solution, is it, Leonie?
No, but you know, I was just thinking about her. I mean, I suspect we might see her in the New Zealand rugby league team, or something in a few years' time. She sounds that great,
an all-rounder.
Yeah.
Well, late night show hosts are making hay of the latest Borat film. President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, can be seen lying on his bed with his hand down his pants while in a room with a woman standing over him that he was led to believe was a TV reporter. Rudy Giuliani is saying he was tucking his shirt in after removing the microphone. Here is a snippet from Borat.
Yag Shamash, I here to defend America's mayor, Rudolph Giuliani. What was an innocent, sexy time encounter between a consenting man and my 15-year-old daughter have been turned into something disgusting by fake news media. I warn you, anyone else try this and Rudolph will not hesitate to reach into his legal briefs and whip out his subpoenas. Dziękuję.
And Twitter had a field day. One said, Rudy, I usually tuck my shirt in while lying on a bed too in front of a young woman I only just met. Don't sweat it. What do you think about this?
I only seen that this morning, so I don't know everything about it, but the image itself is quite shocking. And his hand down his cacks while a lady is standing over him, unaware that there's hidden cameras in the room. But I don't know. I don't know what the story is.
Seems like a spoof or something.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
But why would he do it? Is it natural instinct for him in that situation, or is he playing along with it?
He defended himself on social media, claiming the Borat video is a complete fabrication, and dismissed Baron Cohen as a stone cold liar. Stephen Colbert, though, wasn't buying it. He's quoting, "Why did you go into a bedroom at the suggestion of a young woman to have cocktails to take off a mic?" The comedian mused. I take off a mic every night. Never once have I reclined on a king-size bed and then launched a fact-finding mission into my own groin. I mean, the picture doesn't lie, does it? It's quite a bizarre image, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite odd. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to see more. I shouldn't say that, but I want to know more. But I didn't know about that until today.
Did you see the first Borat film, Leonie?
No,
it's quite funny.
Yeah, it's
quite funny. A clever comedian, isn't he?
Really clever. Yeah, really clever. What he does, you know, is how he winds people up and gets the reactions, the natural reactions from people, which is what, because of the first movie, that's the first thing you think is that Rudy Giuliani's natural instinct in that situation is to put his hand down his pants, you know.